Welcome to the South Shore's Morning News Weekend Review Podcast. I'm Rob Hackelow. Listen for the next 30 minutes as we take a look back at some of the big interviews from the week on the South Shore's Morning News, which airs live weekdays from 5 to 10 a.m. Time now for our Tech Talk segment on the South Shore's Morning News. I'm Rob Hackelow. Every week at this time, David Snell joins us from AxSmart IT in Wareham. David, good morning.
And good morning to you, Rob.
All right, so this week we have some Facebook news, but you're saying this is good Facebook news?
Well, I think it's good news for all of us Facebook users here in the United States.
Oh.
We talked about something, you and I, about 5 years ago, back in 2018. That was, in fact, where Facebook was accused of sharing data with with Cambridge Analytica.
Oh, yeah.
They allegedly scraped this data from Facebook to use it as part of a profile, an effort to profile its users, and to profile voters also.
Yes.
So we talked about it then, and then a lawsuit was filed and everything's gone forward. Now, 5 years later, Facebook, although they have not admitted liability, they have settled for $725 million.
Oh, boy. Okay.
So what that means for us, if the numbers are correct, the 87 million users who had Facebook at that time, or up to that time, can now file a claim to get their share of that $725 million.
Okay, all right. How do I get my money?
That's exactly right. So you fill out a claim on a specific website, and I've got all the information in the article. Or if you don't want to do it online, you can print out the claim and mail it in and to them directly at Facebook Consumer Privacy. And I think that of the 87 million, many folks aren't going to do this.
No, no.
They're not going to hear about it. They're not going to want to waste the time or take the time to do it.
Yeah. So is this anybody that had a Facebook account during this time then is eligible?
Well, actually, the courts went back and said anyone who had a Facebook account starting in 2007 are eligible to get money from this lawsuit settlement.
Wow. Okay. Okay, so mine, I think, goes back to 2008, maybe? I don't know. Was it 8 or 9?
Mine went back at least that long as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, I think that's when everybody was popping up on Facebook. So fill out a claim, and David will put up the links here. And I guess if you do this, how much would you get for your payoff?
I'm glad you asked that question. So, interestingly enough, as usually happens with these major lawsuits, the attorneys who fought this lawsuit and got the settlement are intending to take $183.3 million of that amount of money.
Oh, okay.
That's what their fee is.
They did all the work, okay.
So, yeah, and then it leaves us the settlement reduced to $543.7 million for us Facebook users who asked to be part of the claim. Now, you don't have to do anything, but if you don't, what will happen is you can never sue Facebook in the future for this type of lawsuit.
Okay.
So by not doing anything, you're accepting that you can't take this money and you can't sue them again. So when we look at the 87 million users in the U.S., and you take that $543 million, it's going to come down to a grand total of, if everyone claims,
yep,
a grand total of $6.25 after attorney fees.
Yippee! $6.
So it's still $6 you didn't have to start with. And we don't think all 87 million users are going to file their claim. So it might go up a little bit over time when this is actually settled in the next month or two.
Okay. So, yeah, similar as if they said everybody that has Facebook gets a Starbucks cup of coffee. Enjoy.
Exactly right.
Thank you very much.
good day to you. All right. So if, and that's if everybody did it, but, you know, chances are, you know, you're right. Not everybody will. So, but it's, you know, it's going to range for like maybe a couple of cups of coffee or maybe, maybe a lunch.
It sounds maybe like a happy meal.
Maybe. Yeah. There you go. You can celebrate that way. All right. So, you know, but something's better than nothing. And again, the point I think that you were making too, David, is just to, by doing this, you would not accept that you couldn't sue for this,
or
So
by taking the settlement, you're going to get a little bit of something out of this. Not sure what that's going to be.
Yeah.
But it doesn't take, it takes 2 minutes to do the settlement online, do the form for it. And then I think if you had to hand write out the information, it might take you 5 minutes. So we can all afford to do this to get a little bit of something for nothing, I guess.
That's true. And you're going to pay for the stamp, I guess. But you can mail it in or you can do it online. Is that what you said?
Exactly. Okay. I have links to both. The website to do your claim online and also to print out the claim so you can do it the old-fashioned way with a pen or a pencil and fill out all your information that way.
All right. Well, you know, it's interesting. Okay. Well, I'll have to check this out, and I'm sure a lot of other people are just curious to take a look at it. So David Snell's got the links, and David, where do people go to apply for their portion?
Let's go to xsmartit.com, click on my blog link, and everyone can get a Happy Meal sometime the end of this year.
Yippee! David Snell. Well, they're bringing back the Hamburglar. All right, David, thank you.
Have a great day, Rob.
You too. It's David Snell over at ActSmartIT and Wareham, ActSmartIT.com. ActSmartIT.com. David Snell joins us every week at this time on WATD. And good morning. We continue on the South Shore's Morning News. I'm Rob Hakala. Thanks for being with us. In this segment, author Julia Argy joins us to talk about her new novel called The One, which takes a look at our culture's enduring fascination with reality TV dating shows. Let's talk about The One. Julia, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Great to have you on WATD, and thanks for being here on the South Shore's Morning News. I understand you are a local author as well from Massachusetts, so we're glad to have you on the program today. Let's talk about this novel called The One. Describe the concept for this and why you decided to focus on reality TV world.
Yes, so it is set on a reality dating show called The One, and it follows a contestant named Emily over the course of the season. She is not a hardcore reality dating show fan, so she gets on the show. It's a super claustrophobic environment, and she has to navigate the pressures from her producer and the lead and all of the other contestants as the novel takes place. And though Emily does not love reality dating shows, I, as the writer of the book, have watched quite a few in my time, and that was kind of the impetus for me to set my debut novel on one of these shows, is because I have been roped into the kind of mass frenzy of these programs, and I was interested in, you know, why so many people like to watch them and what it says about our culture that we all are tuned into these strange, unreal spectacles, as you said, on quite a regular basis.
Yeah. Well, I guess after doing the research and writing the book, I'm curious, what did you find about our culture or why these shows seem to be addicting for some people? Not everyone, but many people enjoy them. As I always say, they wouldn't make them if people didn't watch them, right?
Yeah, and it's interesting because it doesn't seem like the, you know, fervor for them has slowed down at all. Whenever you look on the news, it's a new season of something or a new show entirely. And so we're very much, you know, wrapped up in these shows. And in writing the book, I feel like I started to understand my own fascination with them. I think the shows are very intentional about kind of doing twofold work. One is, as promised, you know, setting up a great love story that people can root for. And then it's also I'm sure, as you know, equal parts kind of drama and interpersonal conflict through the contestants throughout the course of the season. And so there's kind of something for everyone, or something for many people when you're watching them. You can try to be invested in the love story. You could be interested in the conflict. And, you know, after the show airs, you can go talk to your friends who have watched it, and you can all have different opinions on the same show that you watched. And so there's this interesting communal aspect of the viewers where there's so much fruitful conversation that can happen when all watching the same piece of media. So there's this fun aspect that can happen when you're not even, you know, currently engaged with watching, but you can debrief after and have just as good of a time as you were when you were watching the show itself.
Yeah, so it's fascinating. We enjoy the watching. We enjoy talking about it and commenting on and giving our own thoughts and opinions. But do we go into that, Julia, knowing? I mean, do most of us know that this can't be real? I mean, it's reality, they call it, but I feel everything on TV must be so controlled and so scripted, and that's what you go into. I mean, do they kind of decide where this season's going already right from the beginning?
Yeah, so that was definitely something I was interested in as I was writing it. I think as these shows have become more of a cultural phenomenon, it has become increasingly clear how manufactured they can be, you know, because people now go onto these shows and are talking about social media and getting a social media following after the show airs. Whereas in earlier seasons, you know, when they started 20 years ago or so, the first iterations of these things, it would be like, yeah, that's our waitress Wendy who's going on the show, and she returns home and she becomes your waitress Wendy again. But now there are these huge platforms that people can gain, and that has started to be reflected in the shows themselves, which I think has made it all the more clear how much, you know, going on the dating show to find love is not necessarily a universal, sincere claim that these contestants have. I think there is a lot of, both on the side of the contestants and on the side of the producers, a lot of manipulation that ends up being in the final product that the viewers end up seeing.
Yeah, I guess you're right, because the scenarios and some of the scenes seem so manufactured and fake, at least from... I would imagine it would be fun to maybe watch a real story about people falling in love, but I suspect there must be things that are less addicting, perhaps, about real, as opposed to reality.
Yeah, I think that's exactly the interplay the book is talking about, where, you know, if reality was that interesting, we wouldn't necessarily crave to be watching these dramatic shows. So there is this big kind of story. It's almost like a novel itself. There's a story to every season that is what's so enthralling for a viewer to be able to tap into. It's like reading a great novel. Mm. And the producers are very cognizant of trying to make a great story, and so it doesn't quite have the doldrums of daily life integrated into it.
Did you base any part of the character, Emily, on yourself? I mean, would you put yourself in that role of going on to one of these TV shows to imagine how it would be for yourself?
I only made jokes about going on one of these shows. I think I would be terrible at doing it. I was talking to one of my friends. I said, I think the personality of a novelist and the personality of someone who becomes, you know, a reality dating show contestant are very opposite. One is like a very introverted, you know, isolated type of work, and the other is a constant public performance. So Emily and I do not have much in common. I would be very terrified to step foot on one of those shows.
Yeah, I guess because you feel like you have to be on all the time, I would imagine, as opposed to being yourself, I suppose. But Emily seems like someone that you talked about. She didn't even necessarily love these type of shows. She just kind of ended up there.
Yeah, I wanted to write a character who, you know, was kind of a newbie at understanding the power dynamics on the show. And so as the reader starts to understand the ways that Emily is being manipulated, Emily is also understanding the ways that she is starting to be manipulated. And that's kind of her arc over the course of the season. But throughout the other contestants, there are people who go on, like you see on reality dating shows, who are like, this is going to be great for my career, and I can't wait for all of this exposure. And so I tried to capture in each character a little bit of the types of people that you do see end up going on television, you know, people who just need, you know, a fun story to tell at parties, people who want to become influencers, you know, people who maybe actually want to find love. Like, there's one on every season of each type, and I tried to integrate that into the book itself.
Julia Argy's been with us today. She has a graduate degree from Harvard University, a degree in statistics, which seems fascinating, and then you went off to pursue the writing program at the University of Michigan. Check out the novel. It's called The One, and you can find out more on Julia's website, juliaargy.com. That's Julia, A-R-G-Y.com. Thanks for coming on the program today.
Thanks so much for having me.
The South Shore's Morning News continues. I'm Rob Hakala with the Morning Team. Great to have you with us on this Wednesday morning. Well, speaking of walking, this guy's going to do a lot of walking coming up later this year. We wanted to bring him in studio to get the word out early. I'm sure we'll talk to him again before the actual event. Paul Venito is back in studio today. You know him from Polly's Push. In 2021, retired flight attendant Paulie Venito pushed an airline beverage cart from Boston Logan Airport to Ground Zero to honor and remember the flight crews of 9/11, including his own colleagues on United Flight 175. He's done some other walks, and this year he told me this is going to be the longest walk so far. Paul, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
Thank Great you to have you back out. In studio.
Yeah, it's going to be it. And I'm excited to be back.
All right. So this is coming up. And this is something, again, you've been pushing the beverage cart, again, in memory and honor of all those crews, because you yourself worked for the airlines, right?
Yes. I was a flight attendant with the United on 9/11. I come off the airplane the night before, and I knew the crew that got on the plane the next morning that went into the second tower, Flight 175. So it was pretty much a... 5 days after 9/11, I knew that they were going to be overshadowed because of the enormity of that day.
Yeah.
And once those towers came down, everyone forgot about what happened at the beginning of that day. So,
and you didn't want those crews to be forgotten, those people that were really, as you talked about, the first line of defense.
First responders, yeah.
Yeah, the first responders. So tell us about when you first had the idea. What made you want to push the beverage cart?
Well, I know exactly when I thought of it was right after the first anniversary. I was working a flight, and I was still angry that everyone was getting recognition, and they all deserved the recognition, the police, yeah, fire, everybody that day. But they never mentioned the flight crew members. And I was on the aircraft, and I looked at the beverage cart, and I told myself, I'll get them recognized. I'll push that thing from the gate they left out of C-19 in Boston all the way to Ground Zero. That was 1 year after 9/11 I thought of it. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, it took me 19 more years before I was able to accomplish it on the 20th anniversary. But I knew I had to do something that no one ever did. I needed something that would get national coverage because the crew members lived all over the country.
Yeah, yeah.
And if a local station did a story, their relatives wouldn't hear about it.
Yeah.
So I just didn't think that the key to the whole thing really was the beverage cart. I was just...
Draw the attention. Yeah. And get the nation's attention,
yeah,
and that's what you've done with,
yeah,
Polly's Push. So tell us what you are going to be doing. This is starting, I believe you said you're going to start your journey in August?
Yeah, right now we have a tentative start date, August 14th, out of Newark Airport.
Okay.
And I'll be pushing the route that United Flight 93, United 93,
yeah,
they left out of Newark that morning. And they ended up in Shanksville, Pennsylvania.
Yeah, as we know, that was the final,
yeah,
plane to go down. And we know the story certainly of Flight 93, but as, again, it took a bit longer. So this is a bit longer of a route that,
yeah,
you were going to make. This is the longest yet.
Oh, yeah. This one is this one's 300 miles. Boston to New York was 220.
Yeah.
The second one was Washington Dulles to the Pentagon, Flight,
yep,
77. That was easy. It was only a 4-day push.
Yep.
It was only a little over 30 miles. So this one here, the 300, and there's a lot of mountains in Pennsylvania I have to go. So,
wow.
I don't do this thing to prove that I'm an athlete because I'm not. It's a mental thing. It really is.
Yeah.
And it's the awareness and the people on the streets and the fire and the police that come out and the message gets across to, and filters out to these crew members' families. I never reached out to any of the families because it's not my place to do that. Mm-hmm. But they've slowly reached out to me, some of them, and that's really, that's the key to the whole thing.
Have you talked? Okay, so they've reached out to you, and they say, Paulie, we appreciate what you're doing.
Oh, I sat down and had dinner with Amy Jarrett's family. That was fabulous. Amy King's family, I pushed a 5K road race 2 years in a row with Amy King's family. The captain of Flight 77's sister contacted me after I pushed last year, thanking me for doing it. Mm-hmm. And Al Marchand's son's wife reached out to me after I pushed to New York. So they slowly, the news gets to them, and social media reaches them.
Yeah.
And because I don't know how long it takes anybody to heal from this. I know crew members that still can't go to Ground Zero that I know personally. Yeah. And so it's really about the awareness, and I guess I get emotional when I talk about it because I see the people's faces on the street when they come out to tell me their experience of 9/11. And I can see the color in their face change as they explain it to me. They've been holding stuff in for years. So even firemen and policemen.
Yeah, it's really hard to imagine, the amount of time. And you're right, everyone heals differently. Mm-hmm. And now we have adults now that have been born and they will see you pushing that cart. And they didn't even live through that.
That's right.
But they can learn, and they can remember. And so this will be the push, as you've done all the different flights to honor all the crews. This will be the longest one yet.
Yeah. I can't think of the future of what might happen next year or the year after. I would like to do one more after this, which would be one more Boston to New York. I'd like to do it on the 25th anniversary, but... let me get through this 300 miles first. You know what I mean?
But, that's true.
This one here is going to be pretty intense. We've driven the route. So
you're looking at, it says here on the website, of course, 30 days, 300 miles.
Yeah.
Is that the goal? The longest push, Paulie's push 3. This is for flight 93. And he's going to make his way from Newark, Liberty International Airport, and make his way out to Shanksville, Pennsylvania. Mm. And you can follow along. Paulie'spush.com is the website. You can find out more about Paulie, about his story. You can, certainly donate as well to honor and inspire Paulie's push, as he has done this for all the crews. And he wants their memories to stay alive. And so he would like your help. Paulie's push is the way to find out more, right?
I appreciate it, yeah.
Yeah, we wanted to get the word out because, certainly we've had you on for the other two walks. And, and we're glad that you reached out to us. And we were happy to get the word out. And Paulie's push 3 is coming up. And this is a big one. We got a text in we want to pass along, too. This is from Linda, Paulie. This says, I know Paulie. Tell him Linda from Braintree says hi. Hope to see him in the hood soon. That's Linda from Braintree saying hi to you, Paulie.
Oh, thank you, Linda. I appreciate it. Yeah, I'll be. I'm in the park training right now.
Yeah.
And at the beginning of next month, I'll be out on the streets and back on the street training on the street. I get some hills. I got to train Blue Hills. I'm going to be training up and down the Blue Hills because the mountains in Pennsylvania are pretty intense. So.
Yeah, to get you used to, not the flatland to go up and down with the cart. All right. So Paulie's Push 3, you can follow along with his journey. As again, paulie'spush.com is the website, and we've got a link to it. And Paulie, thank you so much for coming in and sharing your story with us.
I really appreciate you having me.
We hope you enjoyed this podcast. As always, you can find us on your radio at 95.9 FM, mornings from 5 to 10, or online at 95.9watd.com.
And you can catch up with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can get the links at 95.9watd.com/SS Morning News. And join us next week for another edition of the South Shore's Morning News Week in Review.